Hello and welcome to the Friday, December 4th, 2015 edition of the Sands and Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and today I'm recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Brad wrote a diary about the latest version of CryptoWall. Some people call it CryptoWall 4.0. However, the actual internal version that CryptoWall uses itself is still version 3. Well, there are, however, a number of differences in how this version of CryptoWall operates. So, for example, some of the files that include instruction on how to decrypt it, they changed the name just to CryptoWall from CryptoWall 3.0. It also no longer uses the IPAdder.es domain in order to do a check on the external IP address of the host. So really some subtle changes here, but changes that certainly affect what you will see in your traffic. And Let's Encrypt is now open to the public. So with that, it should be relatively easy for users to get free certificates and, more importantly, manage them automatically for HTTPS web servers. Now, the tricky part here is that it's, at this point at least, pretty Unix-centric. It works on specific Linux distributions. The other part, it's not just about getting certificates for free. You can get those from other places, but Let's Encrypt also allows you to automate the process of deploying these certificates. One little caveat I ran into, I tried it out a little bit and tried to use it for various devices that I have in my network, and it's always a pain to get good SSL certificates for those devices. The certificates that are being handed out by Let's Encrypt are only valid for 3 months, I believe. So it's really important that you automate, that you script the renewal of these certificates. And that's really what the Let's Encrypt client does. You install it on the system and then it will continuously and automatically update your certificates before they expire. Interesting concept. In part, they're saying that they're using this relatively short expiration time to limit the risk of handing out certificates to the wrong people. Also, of course, if you hand certificates to everybody, then there is a good chance that some of these certificates will get stolen. So that's why there is this short expiration time, and the automation of it all is supposed to then actually make it still easy and efficient to maintain these certificates. And Kazakhstan apparently is going ahead and trying to intercept its users' HTTPS traffic, in this case by mandating that users in Kazakhstan are trusting a special root certificate that is owned by the Kazakhstan government. This, of course, exposes the one weakness in the entire SSL ecosystem, that all root certificates are trusted equally. There are, however, ways how you can protect yourself at least somewhat with, for example, certificate pinning. That should be able to make it possible for users to detect if someone is playing man in the middle. Of course, that probably then also means that they cannot connect to the specific service. Now, Kazakhstan has to take this step because, unlike many other countries, right now Kazakhstan does not have a root certificate that is widely trusted, that's under control by its government. And in the past, I've talked a couple times about vulnerabilities in more modern NoSQL databases, like, for example, Elasticsearch or MongoDB and the like. Well, Alienwald put together some honeypots to look at what happens if you have a vulnerable Elasticsearch instance exposed to the public internet. The simple answer is, well, you'll probably become a part of a Unix botnet. The bots being run in this case are essentially standard Unix bots, so very similar to bots that you may see if you're vulnerable to, for example, Shellshock or other standard Unix exploits. And then, well, I got a little sort of observation here for the end of today's podcast. In case you ever wondered why your iPhone is connecting to random looking My Singular IP addresses via IMAP, turns out that's just the visual voicemail. The interesting part that I guess confused me first was that the reverse lookup on the IP address does resolve to what looks like another mobile user. But if you look at the DNS request that actually resolved to this IP address, you'll see something like VVM dot or for visual voicemail. Now, the connection uses port 143, which is usually not encrypted for IMAP, but it then uses start TLS in order to establish an SSL connection. Haven't really played with that yet to see what happens if you strip the start TLS, but there may also be a client certificate being used to authenticate the user. Well, and that's it for today. So thanks again for listening and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.